The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 523 for Sunday, October 12th, 2014. And welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found. And John, I'm thinking we're doing cool stuff found next week, but we'll talk more about that in a little bit. We answer your questions, we share your tips, and as I said, occasionally we do share cool stuff found. Our sponsor for this episode is Gazelle at gazelle.com, where you can sell all your stuff back, all your electronics back, and actually turn them into cash or Amazon bucks. We'll talk more about that later in the show. And a new sponsor also for this episode, Casper at casper.com/MGG, an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. And wait till you hear what I've learned about this company, because I love it when we get these kinds of things that that seem like everyday items and then turn into total geek panaceas. So we will talk about them later in the show, too. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
Here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
How you doing, John F. Braun?
I'm doing all right, but my house is falling apart.
It happens. It happens. It's the joys of homeownership, my friend.
Yeah, there was a pool of water where one should not have been, but
yeah. But that's the second water related issue you've had in almost as many weeks.
Yeah. Well, the other one's fixed, so yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Man. I don't know. Things just keep breaking.
Well, you know, you live in Connecticut. I've been there, and there's probably a lot of limestone in the pipes, or in the water rather. And that eats away at your pipes. And, over time, we went through a phase like that when we lived actually down in Connecticut. We had probably a 2-year stretch. One thing that, and I know we're already off topic here, but one thing that really paid off for us, was that we had what's called a home warranty. Really, it's just a maintenance contract on your home. I think we paid about $300-$400 a year for it, but it gave us, you know, kind of a flat rate for service calls. Now, water damage was sort of a questionable gray area, but we had a plumber that told us he was for the people. And, so he usually got the insurance or got the home warranty company to pay for the stuff. I'm not sure if they were supposed to, but that's between him and them. That's the way I always left.
Yeah. It's just things that were in the house when I got it
right
years ago, and they're just starting to break down.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just annoying that they're all happening, you know, back to back.
Right.
I had my, you know, my engine exploded, had to get new engine.
Yeah.
But hey,
bad things come in threes, right? So your engine, your shower spigot thing, and now this water leak in your basement.
The heater.
Yeah. And then that should do it, right? You're good to go. Hey, I've got a good thing I want to talk about, John. I do. I'm excited to talk about our first sponsor here, which is Casper at casper.com/MGG. I don't know when the last time was that you bought a new mattress, John, but you're probably due for a new one, as most of us are. And mattresses can be really expensive. They can cost like $1,500. Casper doesn't. Casper costs between $500 for a twin size mattress and $950 for a king. That's it. You know, and here's the thing. These aren't just, you know, your standard spring mattresses, that are fine, but Casper goes way beyond that. They use actually two types of foam, right? So they have memory foam that really gives you the support, and really, I mean, it cuddles you. I've tried one of these things. We've got one, you know, it's fantastic. It also uses latex foam, which is in there to keep things cool. Because if you just have memory foam, it can get warm, right? And uncomfortably so for some. Depending on how the mattress is engineered. Well, Casper's is not engineered that way. It's engineered also with latex foam to keep the outer layer cool. This thing is snuggly. I mean, it really, that's the thing. And here's the best part. they know that switching to a memory foam mattress takes some adjustment, and it totally does. You've got to give yourself, you know, for most people, it's a couple of days maybe to get used to it, but for some, it takes a couple of weeks. They've got a risk-free trial and return policy. You try sleeping on a Casper for 100 days. Delivery is free and returns are painless. Now, delivery is interesting, right? I mean, this thing showed up UPS in a big box, but not a box that was too big. In fact, it was built so that it could easily get through doorways with hands on the outside of it, right? So totally smart. These people totally geeked out about what it's going to take to get the mattress from outside your house into the bedroom that you're going to put it in. And then you you take the mattress out of the box, right? And you take the box off the mattress, really, is what happens. And it's all rolled up in a plastic bag, right? And it you take off the plastic bag, which is really easy. And then it's still rolled up in this kind of I don't know if it's Tyvek or what, but it's, you know, it's some kind of thing to keep it like tight together. But it comes with a little welcome kit, and in the welcome kit is a letter opener. And on this, whatever Tyvek wrap it is, there's a big green dot that someone has put there. Because when you roll up the mattress, there's naturally a spot where there's a little bit of overlap. And that's where they tell you to put the letter opener in so that you have no risk of catching the mattress as you're just, you know, zipping this thing across. And then you zip this thing across, it opens it up, the mattress unrolls and then unfolds, right? That's how ours was. And immediately it's good to go. It doesn't need to like poof out for 6 hours or anything. Really, really comfortable, super, super well-built mattress made in America, which is always nice. And like I said, you know, you want a queen size bed, it's $850 for the mattress. You don't need a box spring. You can use it with a box spring, but because it's foam, you can put it on slats, or heck, you could put the thing on the floor. You really can. So check them out. Casper.com/MGG. That'll bring you to our special landing page that we've worked out with them. And here's the best part. I said it was $850 for a queen, and it is for everybody except you. You get to use the coupon code MGG and save another $50, right? So you know, a twin is actually $450 for you with the coupon code, and a queen is only $900. A queen is only $800. A king is only $900. So check it out, Casper.com/MGG, and that'll walk you through the process. But the coupon code is MGG if you want to go through it there. So check it out, and we appreciate having Casper on board. Very much looking forward to that. It's handy to have new companies and especially people that are doing things right. So check them out, Casper.com/MGG. All right, John. Let's let Dave take it away, shall we?
Hey guys, it's Dave Cook. How the heck are you? I am writing with getting you to either give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down on a strategy I have, and to also ask a little bit of advice. So my wife's MacBook Air 2008, original 11 inch, running Mavericks, whatever it's at now, I don't even know, but the version number. But I have replaced her SSD a couple of times, or the flash memory, the flash drive, whatever it is. Not really a, you know what it is. It's just a strip of chips that you put in there. But I replaced it a couple of times. I ordered it originally with a 128 gig, which was tiny. She does lots of photo work, well, a good portion of photo work for her job. She's a teacher and she takes a lot of photos at school. So I replaced it with a 256, which from OWC, which recently just actually stopped working. I wrote to you guys about that already. It was still under warranty, so they took it back and replaced it, which was great. And it's now back in the computer and restored with everything except for her photo library, which I have on a Time Machine backup. The bulk of her library that she accesses is somewhere in the 50 gig range. So what I am planning on doing, and this is the thumbs up or thumbs down section. Sorry, someone's car alarm is going off next to me.
Nice.
I ordered a 64 gig USB flash drive, one of those very small ones that, kind of just sticks out, from the computer by like an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch. And I am planning on dumping everything, her entire photo library off the Time Machine drive to that USB drive. And have iPhoto, which is what she uses, linked to that library, okay, and have it live in there pretty much full time. I think that will work just fine. The question now is backing up that flash drive, because I don't think it'll be included in the Time Machine backup. Is that in fact true? I figured what I could do is do a periodic carbon copy cloner backup to another flash drive or another external drive or anything.
All right, we're going to cut you off there, Dave, because we've got both questions in, and frankly, the way this compressor here is mucking with that car alarm, it's driving me nuts. So let's talk about a couple of things. Let's go backwards with this because, John, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think I'm still a little foggy from this cold I had. So, but Time Machine backs up external volumes that are directly connected to your Mac. That's been my experience. Has that been yours as well?
Yes, it has, and sometimes annoyingly so. For example, the USB drive. So I do my Mac Mini, for example, the machine I'm on right now, I do a carbon copy cloner to an external drive. And the thing is, you actually have to exclude it. All of a sudden I noticed that, starting to starting to grab it. So
you can also have carbon copy cloner eject the drive when it's done its clone.
That's what I do now. Yeah. But sometimes if I reboot the machine, it's there. So yep.
I actually have a little script that runs at login that ejects my clone. I just built it with Automator, but it's just a single action that says eject this drive, and I saved it as an application, and I have that as a login item so that my clone is never mounted because I had that exact same issue. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Indeed.
All right. Okay, so Time Machine would back it up for you. Obviously, you could use Carbon Copy Cloner or something else if you wanted to manage the backup differently. But using the USB-based, USB is plenty fast enough. Oftentimes, though, some of those flash drives are not. So test the speed of the drive that you plan to have this iPhoto library live on. I prefer the Blackmagic test. It's available for free in the Mac App Store. The way it does its things, it bypasses any, it tries to, and it's typically successful at bypassing any caching that's in the mechanism or in the interface. So you're getting true drive speeds, and just make sure that, you don't have some really dog slow, flash drive in there because that could really be a drag. But otherwise, I don't see any reason why that would work. John, do you have any concerns about that?
Actually, I think we confused something here because now I'm seeing somebody pointing something out in the chat room here. No, I'm sorry.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Okay.
No, external drives are not included. So let's take that back. I was thinking a spotlight. So external drives are not included.
Wait.
I have to figure out.
I've had Spotlight back up my external drives. Does it all
time
the time.
Machine. We were talking
Sorry,
Time Machine.
Sorry, right. Time Machine. I've had Time Machine back up my external drives. Okay. But are they simply excluded by default and you need to go into the Time Machine system preference pane, go to options, and then remove them from the exclusion list? Because I definitely have Time Machine backing up external volumes. There's no question about that on my machine. The question is, how did I get it to happen? I thought it happened automatically, but maybe I had to go and remove them. It won't back up NAS drives, right? It's only the direct attached things that are
drives.
Yeah.
Excluded.
Yeah. 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 Okay. So I want to say hi to everybody in the chat room, and I'm going to come back to you folks in the chat room because I want to talk about that. But in order to get Time Machine to back up your external drives, you've got to go into System preferences, time machine options, and make sure that your external drives are not in the exclusion list that's listed there. And then that should do it, because I know I have mine doing it. All right. Any thoughts about the speed of the or any other concerns with having an iPhoto library on a large flash drive, USB flash drive?
The only thing is that that is, so that's something I can speak to. But those, those drives are, even though they are flash memory, it's not the same type of memory as an SSD. So you're talking slow.
Yeah.
Sometimes, the one that I have or a couple of the ones that I have, I benchmark them and they typically are on the order of, tens of megabytes a second, which is, relatively slow when you compare to an SSD.
Right.
So if you can put up with the relatively slow, especially for writing. So, it'll work. But it may not be as, you may be waiting a little while.
Right. Right.
I guess it'd be my only comment on that.
Okay.
So they're better. So, so before you get one of those drives, definitely, poke around and get some benchmarks on them for the read and write speeds, depending on what you're doing with it.
Sweet. All right. We'll move on to David. We'll come back to the chat room later. I have it on my list, so hopefully I won't forget, but because there's some fun stuff to talk about there. Some new developments. I got geeky this week, but we'll talk about that in a minute. David?
Hey guys, this is David over at Main Street Apple. I had a question for you, twofold, if I may get a two-for-one in. One, I upgraded to iOS 8 on my new 6 Plus, and the app that I had is no longer available or compatible with iOS 8, so they pulled it, apparently, and it's no longer in the store. So I went into my iTunes backup because I did that before I upgraded my phone. And the app is there, and I can restore the app. And when I do so, the data or the database tied to it is blank. So it's like a brand new app. So that I backed it up. So that data's got to reside somewhere. And I went into the IPA file and show package contents and try to dig around there. And I can't find anything where that data is contained. So it must be saved somewhere else, perhaps. So that was my first question. My second question is, with this whole family sharing thing, if I've set up my family's accounts with what you've recommended in the past, we all have our own iCloud, and then we just use one account for purchases only, why would I want to change what's been working for all these years? What benefits am I missing out on, perhaps? So that was my second question. This is where you cut me off. Appreciate it.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so when you delete an app from your iPhone, the data goes with it. And when you bring the app back, as you found, the data doesn't come back, right? In fact, you're in a bit of a catch-22, because the only approved way to get the data back is to restore from your full backup. But if you can't get the app on there at the same time that you're restoring from the full backup, then you're out of luck in the Apple prescribed way. You may, however, once you get the app on there, the app creates its data directories and its little sandbox and everything. Normally you can't touch that, but there is software that might let you pull some data from the app's sandbox from the backup and insert it into the app sandbox on your iPhone. And I think, John, you've played with this a little more than I have, but the refresh of DiskAid is called iMazing, iMazing. And I believe it can often do exactly this, right, John? Have you ever used it to do that?
Not the new one, but yeah, iMazing pretty much lets you see everything
right
on your device.
Right.
On your iOS device. So, Sounds like a good thing to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done this again. I haven't, like you, John, I haven't done it with iMazing, but that's what this, that's one of the things. I mean, it's one of these apps that frankly you should just have because it's, it does all kinds of things, but that is one of the things that it does, is it lets you kind of move the data around. So you may be able to restore the data, depending on how the app does things. sometimes apps get wonky and you've got to restore exactly in the right way. Otherwise the app sees that, wait a minute, you know, I've got the data, but I don't have the index for the data. And so I'm going to ignore it. That kind of thing can happen, but that's probably your best shot. Certainly, that's where I'd start. So that's question number one. Question number two, with regards to family sharing, it's been a bit of a disappointment, I will say. The thing that you will miss out by doing things the old way, having a separate account that everyone shares for app purchases, the thing you will miss out on is, some level of security, because everybody has to know the password for that account in order to download or sometimes even update apps. Number two is you can't do any, everybody has full access. So if you've got kids on the account and you want to limit their ability to buy apps from a technical standpoint, as opposed to say a parental, rules-based standpoint, you can't do that with the old method, but family sharing does let you do that, and you can do approvals and all that sort of thing. So that's really the, that's what you're missing out on. But what you have is very simple and allows you to charge to, if you have, you know, you can share store credit this way because it's only coming to one account. With family sharing, store credit is only good for the account that you apply it to. So even if I'm the master account, my kids, when they bill things, even if I've got $100 in store credit, my kids, when they bill things, it gets billed to my credit card. And so I pay cash for the stuff that my kids buy if they do it that way, even though I have store credit, which is just stupid, if you ask me. But I mean, I get it. If the kids get their own store credit and apply it to their sub accounts, great. Let them, you know, burn that on their own. Maybe they get stuff for Christmas or whatever. You know, that's great. But with me being the master account holder, I mean, they're billing my credit card. Why not just bill my store credit? Please bill my store credit. So that's one stupid thing. The other stupid thing is you have to use a credit card. You can't use PayPal if you have family sharing. You can. I actually found a way of making it work, but it doesn't work. PayPal, if you have it, it won't let you do any of those sub-account purchases. So it's not perfect. I wouldn't recommend it, actually. I'm sort of living with a headache right now, and we may go back to doing it the old way. And you can. There's nothing stopping you from going back and doing it the old way. So that's what I got there. You got any thoughts on this, John, before we move to Lori?
I don't share with my family, so.
Right. There you go.
That's right. No, you just have to get rid of some family members to just, you know, uncomplicate your life.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. Yes. I mean, technically true, I suppose. It depends on how you get rid of them, though, because things may get a lot more complicated. Or perhaps they get really simple if you want 3 squares a day and you know, you're not going to be sleeping in a Casper mattress, I tell you that much.
You told me one of your ungrateful kids didn't want a hand-me-down iPhone. It's like, come on.
Yeah, we solved that problem. Yeah,
well, to me, it's a first world problem.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, this is not actually a problem. Right.
My dad's not giving me the latest iPhone. It's like,
that's right. Correct.
Let's readjust here.
Right? Let's readjust.
Let's readjust our perspective on life.
On life. Yeah, exactly. All right. So Lori has a question, and let's see. What's happening is she says, she doesn't update her podcasts in iTunes often, but she does. And when she does, she often sees an exclamation point by each podcast saying, iTunes has stopped updating this podcast because you have not listened to any episodes recently. Would you like to resume updating this podcast? And she asks if there's a way to disable this, and the answer is no. And is there a way to get around this? Or to set it to a different expiry time? And the answer is not really. However, there is an Apple script that you can run that will en masse kind of skip this problem or reset this for all of your podcasts. And it's at dougscripts.com. And the script is named Update Expired Podcasts. And it's currently at version 2.2. So we will put a link to that in the show notes because, because that'll be helpful for anyone that didn't already know about it. And I that's all I got to say about that. You have any thoughts on that, John? Or?
A piece of garbage.
Yeah, well, ain't that the truth?
I was even looking. I was just glancing here in secrets, and there isn't even a secret, you know, plist setting to or a terminal command to disable that.
No, and there isn't.
Maybe, I think they'll fix that in 12, maybe.
Have they? Oh gosh, have you seen 12 yet?
I just heard people shaking their foot.
Oh, it's a disaster.
I'll have to install the. I haven't looked at Yosemite for a while, so
you'll hate your life if you do.
Well, I have it. I'm not going to install it right now. I have, you know, the first build, the
right.
First preview build. You know, put it on an external drive, so I, you know, it won't destroy anything.
Sure.
But yeah, I guess what are they now up to? GM2.
Well, it depends on GM2 or release 5 or whatever it is, depending on if you're developed. But yeah, it's GM candidate number 2. Yeah,
which kind of made me nervous. Well, you know, it was funny because some people were like, oh, I think including you was like, oh, well, it's the Gold Master. So go ahead and install it. I'm like,
yeah, I was mistaken when I said that in the last show. It was a Gold Master candidate, which is different from a Gold Master.
Close, but no cigar.
Close, but yeah. No cigar. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I misspoke.
That's a weird designation, too. It's like, you know, it's like not alpha, not beta. Not.
Yeah, we're hoping this is Gold Master. Post-beta. Post-beta.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they've been having a rough time lately, so let's hope they get this right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'd rather have them do this right and roll something out that's tested in more places, which is what the public beta does for us. So that's good. Hey, all right. So I wanted to talk about the chat room. So MacGeekGab.com/stream, and we have a nice collection of listeners in there today. I am going to say happy birthday to Mac11 Hay. I believe this is her first time in the chat room, and it's also her birthday. So happy birthday. Hey, but it used to be, if you've never been in the chat room before, or listened to the stream before, you won't identify with this problem, but, this problem no longer exists. It used to be that if you got into the stream when we weren't recording either during the week or even just before we started the stream up, you would hear nothing because there was no stream happening. And then, when we started the stream, you'd have to reload things in order to attach to the stream. Well, I fixed that. I got geeky this week, John. I wrote a bunch of scripts. I learned a lot more about how to manage an Icecast server. And so what we have now is when we're live streaming, as we do when we record the show, most, if not all the time, you hear us live streaming the show. And when we're not live streaming, you hear currently a loop of the 10 most recent episodes. So, and everybody hears the same thing, which means if you join the chat room, everyone in the chat room will also be hearing the same thing. So the chat room and the stream are now live and accessible on the web at MacGeekGab.com/stream inside the MacGeekGab app, in just the live stream section there, 24/7. There's always something streaming there. Yep. And you'll know because I was able to put a little intro file at the beginning of the stream. So if it's not live, you'll get an intro that says it's not live, and then it'll dump you into wherever that stream is happening. If it is live, you'll get a different intro that says, hey, the guys are live and here they are. So that's how that works. And it actually was kind of a fun process to go through. So the question I have for you, obviously, of course, is, are you having any trouble with it the way that it is? And we've been testing it, and Brian Monroe was actually quite helpful because he was around and helped me test things. But let's test it en masse and go ahead and listen and attach and let us know if you have any trouble. And then also from a user experience standpoint, the big question that I have, in addition to anything I haven't thought of, is does having the most recent 10 shows on a loop make sense? Is there, or would you prefer something else? Right. You know, so throw ideas out. I'm not going to throw any of my ideas out because I don't want to salt things. I just want to have your ideas. So, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. And, but it's fun. I like having the stream going all the time. It's pretty cool. So that's that, John. At the end of last show, well, you weren't here. because my internet connection died. And of course, at the time, we didn't know what happened. So those of you that that listened to show 522, you heard at the very tail end, John just went away. And I decided to finish the show, and because I had no idea what the problem was, and figured we were better off just letting the steamroller run. It turned out to be one of my power line adapters that lives between here and the router just stopped working. And it's interesting. It's one I've had in service for quite a while. It's an Amped, and I like it too. It's the Amped Wireless PLA2 unit, and I like it because it's small and it has power pass through. We'll put a link to these in the show notes. I'm going to send this one back to them. They want to see it because they've not seen this kind of thing before happen. But yeah, it was interesting. There's three lights on it, and all power line units are kind of the same in this regard. There's three lights. There's the power light. There's an Ethernet connection light. And then in the middle, there's the, and now I'm connected to the power line system light. And that one was bright red on this. I did do a full reset of it, and it went back to green. But I noticed that the connection to the switch via Ethernet was only 100 megabit, not gigabit. So something went wrong. And that's sort of one of the potential liabilities with power line is, you know, you're not connecting it to, you can't plug it into a, maybe you can, but I don't plug them into to surge protectors. So, and I don't think you can, but correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I've made a bad assumption all these years. So they're not protected from surges and things like that. So I have no idea what happened to this one, but that's what happened. So there was no internet. And once I diagnosed that, I had a spare. So I put it in, and it's why I keep spares of things like this around: power line and switches. Always good to have at least one extra, because when they go down, they go down, and that's that. Switches die all the time. I lose switches probably once a year. That's crazy. But that's what happened. So that's what cut you off, John. Hello? Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I just heard a hiss and that was it. All right. So Powerline. You and I were discussing this. You should get some redundancy going there. Dual network feeds or something.
I'm not sure how that would work. I mean, it would be like plugging... It essentially, power line becomes like a switch, right? Like it's just an Ethernet connection, right? So mm-hmm. If I had two power line connections between two switches, it would be like having two Ethernet cables plugged in between two switches. That's not advisable, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that creates weird loops and such. I've always been told no, bad, bad. I don't know how that relates to power line, but certainly with just Ethernet, you don't want to create that kind of disaster. Or do you? Do you do that with your Ethernet switches? Do you run, or your, you know, with your Ethernet cables, do you run two just in case one dies? I don't think that's a good idea.
I'm only doing that in one situation.
Okay.
The Synology NAS actually has a feature where you can run, I don't know if all of them do, but I think most of the Synologies have two gigabit Ethernet ports on them.
A lot of them do, yeah. Yeah.
And I was poking around one time looking at the settings, and it said, hey, you want to bond these together? I'm like, huh, that sounds like a good idea. And so I did it, and it gives you two choices. So one is this, you know, standard for what I guess we'll call link aggregation. It's some 802... Mm-hmm. Or whatever, it's some accurate thing there, and it says, "Well, I'll try it using the standard, but if it doesn't work, then I'll use kind of my own version of redundancy."
Okay, so the answer does it just get a second IP address at that point?
I think what happens is, so it runs it on one cable, and then if it detects that one is shot, then it'll switch over to the other.
Okay. Okay.
So I don't believe you get, you know, double bandwidth like you would with link aggregation, but it does provide some redundancy. So in case.
Yeah, the Synology, like you said, supports link aggregation, but your switch has to as well, and you need to turn it on or use the right ports for it. It's always a
yeah. So because my Switch, which is an AirPort, doesn't support the link aggregation, it backs off to this other thing. But it is, you know, a form of redundancy. So if one of my Ethernet ports explodes, you know, or fails, it'll switch over to the other one.
Right.
Which is kind of a neat feature when I found it. And again, there's two flavors. One is the one where you get double the performance, and the other is more, you know, back off to this if the other one is not working or somebody trips over the cable or something.
Right. Yeah, very cool. Cool. All right. Yeah, but I don't know if you're supposed to do that between switches. I think that I'm sort of watching the stream in the chat room here, and people are saying, yeah, don't. So that's, I'll take that advice. I want to talk about our second sponsor here, John, and that is Gazelle, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Gazelle, this is always a popular time of year for the folks at Gazelle, because what they do is they will give you cash for your old iPhone, your old iPad, all kinds of stuff they will buy back from you. And so the way it works is you just visit gazelle.com and you tell them, okay, I want to sell off my cell phone or my iPad. They'll even take old iPods. They'll take laptops, right? Mac laptops anyway. Maybe even iMacs, depending on the model number, right? So if you've got stuff that you are no longer using and you want to turn that into cash fast, these are the guys to check out. So gazelle.com, you tell them what you have. You go through the process. You haven't even given your name yet, right? You're just saying, I have an iPhone, and then you tell them what size it is. Is it, you know, 16 gig, 32 gig, 64 gig, or 128 if you're selling off one of the brand new ones. And you tell them what carrier it's on. Your best bet, of course, is to go through your carrier's process of getting your phone unlocked, because you get some extra money for it, quite a bit of extra money for it if it's unlocked. And then you get it unlocked or not, and you tell them what condition it's in, and then they give you a price right there. And from what I've seen, prices on iPhones have actually been going up in the last week or so here, which is quite interesting. So go check it out, you know, and maybe you can, you know, take that old iPhone 5 and get a couple $100 or more for it. Real simple. And they'll, you know, at that point, they ship you a box if you don't have one. They no charge to you. They ship you the box. It has a return label in it, or you can just print a return label if you've got a box you want to use. Again, no charge to you. You pack the thing up in the box, ship it back. Got to make sure to disable Find My iPhone first. That's real important, because that's effectively an activation lock on the device. So you do that, you ship it back to them. They make sure that you've disabled Find My iPhone. They make sure it's the right device and it's in the condition that that you've said. And then they send you your money. They either send it PayPal, they'll send you a check, or they'll send you Amazon bucks. And if you go the Amazon route, they give you an extra 5% on top of it. And, you know, we're heading into the holiday shopping season. So consider those Amazon bucks, because I know if you're like me, you're going to go spend a fortune at Amazon over the next couple of months anyway. No sense not just taking the extra money and doing it that way. So check it out. Yeah. Gazelle.com is where the process starts, and the process ends with you getting money. It's that simple. So check them out. Gazelle.com. And through the checkout process, you'll be able to tell them that Mac Geek Gab sent you. Well, we appreciate that. They appreciate it too. All right, John, what are we going to here? Where are we? Let's go to Leslie. It's going to be a good one. I think so. Leslie writes, when I sync my iPhone 5S to my Mac and there is at least one photo taken, iPhoto launches, and I get a message that says 16 photos have been found in the iPhoto library that were not imported. Would you like to import them? If I answer no, I get the message the photos will be placed in the folder. It gives a big, long folder, recovered photos being as part of the name. The number at the end increments. If I answer yes, the message pops up again. And when I answer yes again, iPhoto loads regularly. I've repaired permissions on my Mac. I've rebooted. I've quit all background programs and rebooted the iPhone. And as it turns out, this problem happens even if I launch iPhoto without my iPhone connected. What is it? Well, sometimes what iPhoto does when you're importing pictures, it saves them into essentially a temporary folder as it copies them off the phone, and then it pulls them in from that folder. And sometimes things get stuck, and sometimes things get double stuck, and you're in the latter category. So the way to fix this is quit iPhoto, disconnect your iPhone so that it's not auto relaunching on you. Right click on your photo library, which is usually inside home, your home directory and pictures, and choose show package contents. Within there, you'll find a folder named import or importing. Drag that folder to the desktop. Do not make any other changes. Then launch iPhoto, and you should be in good shape. It should not give you that message anymore because that temporary holding pen has now moved to the desktop. You can go through that folder on the desktop and actually drag those photos into iPhoto in the normal way, and it should import them just fine unless they're damaged or something like that. But that's how I would solve that problem. How about you, John?
There's another way you could solve it, I believe.
All right.
Just verify here. So iPhoto, both iPhoto and Aperture have a, because to me that sounds like a form of damage, if you will. So the thing is, if you launch iPhoto, Dave,
yeah,
and you hold down Command and Option, well, hey, you're going to get something called Photo Library First Aid.
Okay. Does that fix this? Because Apple didn't recommend, I mean, there's a knowledge base article.
I'm suggesting okay. it may, because okay. it actually does have, I mean, I see an option here, so it has repair permissions.
Yep.
This is, rebuilt thumbnails. It's not that, but it has repair database. So what I'm suggesting is that for some iPhoto hiccups yep. like this, I think in this case, repair database may have also noticed, hey, that's not quite right. This shouldn't be here. And there's rebuild database.
Yep.
That's another thing. So it may, you know, rip through it and say, well, what's this doing here? This shouldn't be here.
Right.
Yeah, because you want, I mean, is that, you know, they warn you. They're like, you know, be careful when you're mucking around in this package because you could, you know, screw everything up. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So just want to toss that in because that's an option now, I believe, both with iPhoto and Aperture. If you hold down Command Option when launching, you will get a number of opportunities to repair a damaged database.
Awesome. Well, hopefully one of those two will solve it for Leslie with this.
Yes.
All right. You want to take us to Bilge, please, John?
Oh, my gosh. What a nightmare. Now, this is an actually. Here's Bill's problem. Dude, it was the most bizarre problem. So here was his issue. So as most of you know, you can have a calendars. There's a calendar program on OS X, and there's you can also link to the calendar on your iOS devices, and everything should sync up nicely. Should. Here's the problem, though. So one thing you can do is you can add a holiday calendar. And this is where it gets kind of weird. On iOS, it seems that it adds one if you're connected with iCloud. It seems that you have one by default. It kind of includes and there's no way to get rid of it. And that's something I want to ask you about, Dave.
What do you want to ask me about here?
What I want to ask you, pay attention, man.
No. Yeah, well, there was somebody. Yeah. Stop Skyping me, folks. I got to ask you. It's great that you know how to find me. But if you're on the stream during the show, stay in the chat room. It's much better. I can only take so many input streams at once. So go ahead, John. Sorry.
All right. So what I'm asking is if you go to any of your iOS devices and you look under calendars, I'm curious if you see a holiday calendar under other. Because in my case, I do.
I go into
but this wasn't iOS. But this wasn't calendar. Quite as problem. Well, here was Bill's problem.
Yeah, I see U.S. holidays subscribed. Yes.
Yes. And all right. So I want to confirm that. The thing is only on iOS, that's included and there is no way to get rid of it. Because try to delete it. You won't be able to delete it. It was really frustrating me. So that's kind of a side issue. But here was his issue. So he said, hey, on one of my devices, and I didn't quite believe him, he said, I'm seeing holidays on the wrong days. And I'm like, isn't that totally bizarre?
Huh.
And in fact, and I said, well, you know what? There's one thing you could check here. Because I think I've had events appear on the wrong day or the wrong time. There is a setting in iOS that could cause this to happen. And it's in settings, mail, contacts, calendars. And under the calendar heading, there's something called time zone override. And I was like, is time zone override on? Because if it is, that may explain why some things are appearing on the wrong day. Now he got back to me and he said, no. So much for that theory. But it's useful to know about that setting, because if things are in your calendar and they don't appear where or when you think they should, you may want to make sure that you don't have time zone override on.
Yeah, that's an interesting setting. It's bizarre, because if it's off, things on your iPhone in the calendar show up local time, right? So if I set an event for 9 a.m. Eastern time, and then I fly or drive or walk to California, once I get to California, that event will show up at 6 a.m., right? Because I'm now Pacific time. However, if I turn time zone override on, then whatever time zone I set in that preference there is what my calendar will show up as. So yeah, I guess if you were to set your time zone to something that was, you know, 12 hours or more off of where you actually were, it could shift holidays by a day, potentially.
Right.
Yeah,
but that wasn't the case.
Okay.
So then he sent me a bunch of screenshots showing me that some holidays, in fact, occurred on the right days and 2014 holidays, and some were a day off. And I'm like, wow, that's really bizarre. So I'm like, all right, let's go to the tried and true solution of turning something off and on again, or a variation thereof. Now, when I looked at it, when he showed me on his iOS device his list of calendars, his was different. Well, actually, mine was the same, but for a different reason. So he actually had under iCloud, home, calendar, and work, which is pretty standard. And then under other, he had US holidays subscribed.
On his Mac, right?
No, on his iOS device.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Right. That makes sense.
Or on his iPad. And I'm like,
yeah.
You know what? Because then I looked at my setup and I'm like, you know what? Let's try this. So the thing is, I said, why don't you go to one of your Macs? Because sometimes you can't do certain calendar things on iOS. You have to do it on the Mac side.
Right.
And I said, you know what? Why don't you subscribe? So first I asked them what the URL of it was. And it was what I call an old style calendar link. It was like file:// and something on the Apple server.ics. And that's kind of old style. The newer ones, the link is, I think, webdav. So, or webcal. So I said, you know what? Why don't you try to subscribe to a different calendar? And the thing is, the latest link I saw here, there's actually, and I'll put it in our chat room here, there's actually a calendar that you can download that's a holiday calendar that you
okay.
can subscribe to. So I said, why don't you try that? He didn't, though. What he did do, though I actually did that and brought my calendars over to a more modern one. But so what he did is he finally answered my question and said, oh, well, both on my MacBook Pro and my Mac, I see po5-calendars.cloud.com/holiday/US.
Yep.
And I can't see beyond that using the get info in the calendar.
Right. Just because it's grayed out. Yeah. Right.
But he said, all right, so he took a slightly different approach there, but he said the location of it was on my Mac. So I think that was corrupted. So it's either old or corrupted. So
well, it just needs to be changed to location iCloud, right?
And that's what he did.
Okay.
Right. Because the thing is, you can set the location of a calendar and say, you know, should I store this locally, or should I, you know, be grabbing this from iCloud or putting this in iCloud?
But it's not grabbing it. It's putting it in iCloud. That's right. Right. Yeah.
So basically, what he did is he changed the location of the calendar from on my Mac to iCloud, and apparently that fixed the problem.
Yeah, then it'll show up on your phone. That's right. Yeah, and that's true of not just the auto subscribed holidays calendar there in calendar, but anything. Like if you have a, you know, a TripIt account and you subscribe to their calendar, to the ICS feed, you can store it on your Mac, in which case it will only be on your Mac, or you can store it in iCloud, and then suddenly it populates to all your iOS devices, which is really handy. It's a little weird. And I think you'll even see it on the web. But I know that that's been sort of hit or miss over time, or not hit or miss, but it has changed over time. But I think currently it still appears on the web, which is handy.
Oh, the web iCloud interface?
Yeah.
I'm not having that happen.
You're that not. Okay, maybe it doesn't.
That actually kind of bothers me.
Yeah, maybe now is one of those times when it doesn't appear on the web. It has gone back and forth. I don't use the web calendar because of that, frankly. It's just, and I have calendars on every device I own, so I don't need yet another one.
Now someone pointed out in our chat room here what is interesting, and this has bitten some people too while I was researching this question here. The calendar on your iOS device, Dave. So, of course, you and I, our calendar is U.S. holidays because
right.
Our devices know we're in the U.S. That gets localized. So if your device is in another country, you will get, you know, Australian holidays or, you know, because every country.
Well, is that is that true? Because when I've traveled to other countries, my calendar hasn't changed. I think it's when you set it up on your Mac, it pushes. I mean, it's not magic that it shows up on your iOS device, as you just pointed out, right? It shows up there because your Mac has subscribed to it and then said store this calendar on iCloud. So I think if you set your Mac up in Australia or somewhere else and then push that holiday calendar to iCloud, which it is by default, then you'll get those other holidays on your iPhone, but you won't just magically get holiday calendars on your iPhone as you travel about the world. I don't believe.
Right. Okay. Right? Yeah. You may have to somewhere set the country or region.
I think it happens as you set it up, and you can subscribe to any calendar you want and push them to iCloud. I think you just automatically, when you set it up on your Mac, you're subscribed to your local country's holiday calendar. I think that's how that works. So, but we can put this in the, there's a couple of links we'll put in the show notes about this. So, yeah, it's fascinating. Hey, this week saw something interesting for, iCloud users. And that was, if you had turned on two-factor authentication in the past, it got expanded by force this week, right? So, by that, I mean, previously, if you had two-factor authentication, means you're not just entering a password to prove that you're you. You're either, in most cases, you're getting a code sent to your iPhone that you then have to type in when you log in on the web. And that way it's two things going on. So that if somebody gets your password, they can't necessarily log in as you, or it makes it a lot harder for them to log in as you. And up until very recently, two-factor authentication only protected your main account and financial data. It did not protect your mail. It did not protect your photos. It didn't protect your calendars, nothing, right? That is no longer the case. Two-factor authentication does protect all that stuff now. If you use a third-party client to connect, those don't yet support two-factor authentication because Apple hasn't pushed out the way for developers to do that. Or if they have, developers haven't had it long enough to actually adopt it. So if you use something on your Mac like BusyCal or Fantastical on your Mac, those are logging into iCloud directly and will have failed, right? As of, I believe as of about midday on Friday, but it may have been Thursday, those now fail and you'll get, you know, what's your password? And you can type in your password all day long and it won't work because you're not logging in with the two-factor. But as I just said, those apps don't support two-factor for iCloud on the Mac yet because they can't. So how do you do this? Well, what you have to do is you have to create an application-specific password. And you do that by going to appleid.apple.com, go into the security settings. And as you log in there, you'll have to do your two-factor thing. You'll get a little code on your iPhone that you type it on the web. It lets you in. You go in and you say, I want to create a password, say, for BusyCal. It puts the password on the screen. You copy the password, you paste it into BusyCal, and then you forget about it. You don't save it. You're not supposed to save it anywhere. And you don't use it for anything else. And then that way, if you need to, you can go in and revoke BusyCal's access without changing anything else. But what got interesting, so I did this on my Mac, and I'm like, great, better do it on my iPhone too while I'm thinking about it. Otherwise, I'll forget about it. So I dug in on my iPhone, and I use Busy To Do on my iPhone, and I also use Fantastical. And so I dug into their settings, and I couldn't find where to put my iCloud password. I'm like, wait, but I got it. You know, what's going on? And then I realized and remembered those apps don't log into iCloud. They just use the iOS device's calendar store, which is fed by Apple. So you don't have to worry about it on iOS, as it turns out. You only have to worry about it on your Mac. So, but you do have to worry about it on your Mac if you have two-factor turned on. If you don't, then, and you're just using the single password, then it doesn't matter. But you should turn two-factor on. Do you have it on, John?
No.
But you're Mr. Security. You're always ahead of me on this stuff.
Oh, sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
I have other means of dealing with that.
What's your means? Now I'm curious.
Can't tell you. Just don't touch any of my devices, all right?
Okay.
You may regret it.
Okay. So while I'm at your place this week, I just hands off of your devices. Is that right?
Well, if you want to find out what I got in place here.
Okay.
It's kind of genetically. I can't say anymore.
That's as far as we're going to go with it. That's right. That's right.
I've been thinking of that as a mad scientist. You know, I have a DNA-based, retaliation scheme or something.
Yeah, there was a we saw some show about that. Oh, we watched that new show Scorpion, where they had genetically targeted diseases towards specific people, which was just an interesting concept, which I kind of liked. I mean, I'm not supporting it. I liked it as a premise for a TV
episode. But I'm glad I didn't have it enabled, because then I'd be banging my head against the wall saying, well, now what?
Yeah. Well, now that once you listen to the show,
now,
then you'd be
now,
in good shape.
Now look at, yeah. Now I'll check it out.
Yeah. Right. All right. I want to, we had a couple of things come in that I sort of logged down as tips here, John. And so the first one was Michael over on Google Plus asked, MacGeekGab.com/Google+. That's the easiest way to get to our community. And it's growing. It's like crazy growing. It's like seen a 20% growth in the last 2 weeks, which is awesome. But I know. Michael asked if anyone was sharing their clipboard between their Mac and iOS device. And I found this really fascinating, because I tried something in the past. I think it was it Pop Clip? I can't remember the name of what it was, but I felt like at the time it was chewing up my battery, and I wasn't, I wasn't entirely thrilled with the whole concept. So I sort of did away with it, but I've always wanted to do this. And so it seems like the battery thing has been solved now for the most part. I'm pulling up the one that I've used. It's going to be there. PasteBot was the one I used. Sorry, PopClip's an app for the Mac. So I had used PasteBot, but evidently now that works quite well. A couple of the ones that were mentioned in order of preference from our listeners, there were two. One called Command C, which is a for pay. It's not very much. It's, a couple of bucks thing. It's been updated for iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, which is a good, even if you don't have a 6 or a 6 Plus, that's a good barometer of how much attention the app developer is paying to the ecosystem here. And, whether you want to kind of get them involved in your daily life and rely on them. So Command C is out there. And people say it's fantastic. And the whole idea is when you copy something on your Mac or your iOS device, it is the clipboard is shared between the two. I'm surprised Apple's not doing this with Continuity, but they're not, even in Yosemite, to my knowledge. So it's still something we need to worry about here. And I believe most of these, Command C certainly being one of them, allows it keeps a clipboard history too, which can be really handy. So So Command C is one. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. And Desk Connect is the other that came up kind of surprisingly, because that one hasn't been updated since December. So, I don't know what that means. It is free, though. So if you are, you know, interested in trying it out, we'll put a link to that one, too. So, and there's a couple others. We'll put the the Google Plus thread out there in the chat room as well. So, or in the stream. What am I saying? What words am I using, John? The show notes. That's it. That's right. Do you use one of these, John?
No.
Okay.
Like I told you, I don't share.
Well, but this is sharing with yourself.
I don't do family sharing, and I don't.
But these both require an app to be installed on your Mac as well, of course, because that's, you know, that's
I
how
use
it works.
Notes. Notes. That's my clipboard that goes between. Yeah, no, seriously. When I need little pieces of data, notes, synced with iCloud. It's usually what I use. It's simple.
Huh. And it seems Desk Connect does more. It does web pages in addition to the clipboard. It does web pages and maps, and it actually was doing some not quite sharing of calls, but you could, you know, send one to the other, and it's got AppleScript support. So maybe there's more to this Desk Connect thing. Maybe we need to check that out. All right. So that's that. You want to take us to, I think it's a different Michael, John, but you want to share this other tip that we've got from another Michael?
Yes, because dude, it's awesome. Well, I think it's awesome because it there's a store of hidden little goodies that we're going to share with you. Don't tell anyone else. but Michael pointed out, so I was scratching my head over the built-in packet capture.
Right. We talked about this in the last show. Yeah.
Right. And he said, yeah, well, it's probably TCP dump and is the program. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds right. And the format it saves it in is something called PCAP. But then I did some more digging, Dave, and this is something I think we may have mentioned, but it's worth mentioning again. So number one, there's a place on your Mac where there is just a treasure trove of useful little goodies. Where is this? And I'm going to tell you where you want to look. You want to go to System, Library, Core Services. Now be careful. You shouldn't, there's some stuff in here you shouldn't touch. But this you can touch.
Most of the things in there. Yeah.
Well, or most of these things here are, like for example, screen sharing is in here. So when you do screen sharing, that's where the app lives. So you can run it from here if you want to. Actually,
you can.
Some things here, if you try to run them.
Yeah.
There's some daemons and other stuff in here. So, you know, take a look here, but I'm going to tell you one that it is safe to run, Dave. And that is, oh my gosh, where is it?
Uh-oh. I didn't lose you again, did I, John?
Just kidding. No. here it is. Is it in here?
It is.
No, here it is. Well, I found it. It's called Wireless Diagnostics.
Yep.
Now you can also find it with Spotlight. Now for some reason, I'm not seeing it in this directory here.
Okay.
At least on Mavericks, if you start typing in wireless, it'll match something called Wireless Diagnostics.
Okay.
You know, for a reason, I'm not seeing it in Core Services. All right. I'm going to have to double check that, but you should be able to launch it. And what'll happen, though, is you launch this wireless diagnostics program, but don't step through the steps here. Here's what you want to do to find the good stuff. So when it comes up, it'll say, hi, I'm, you know, the program which I think will also come up if your Mac detects there are problems with your wireless connection. But you don't want to click continue. What you want to do is you want to go to the window menu, and then you want to say utilities or hold down command 2. And then you get this sub menu of all these fascinating little statistics, but also tools. So for example, it'll give you info. A lot of this you will also see if you hold down the option key when you look at the airport menu, but it gives you quite a bit more information, I think, about what's happening with your wireless adapter. There's logging, Wi-Fi scan, performance, but then the one I want to mention, because it's applicable here, is frame capture. What does that do? Well, frame is another name for a network packet. So basically, Dave, this is a wireless traffic sniffer built into the OS. And so when you choose frame capture, you will then get a channel that you can capture on, and also the width as an option, depending on the machine you have. And then once you start, it's going to basically log all traffic. And when it's done, it's going to save it to your desktop as a WCAP file, which is kind of weird. I don't know why it does that. Because what you probably want to do, and this is what I did, is if you rename it from WCAP to PCAP, then programs that are meant to understand PCAP, which is packet capture, will be able to import it and let you look at what's going on. So, for example, I was able to use Wireshark to open this PCAP file, and then I could see the network traffic that was collected by this.
That's pretty cool. Huh.
So the thing is, it's buried. The utility is buried, but you can run it, and then you have to kind of take this, side route to bring up this utilities menu. And there's some other good stuff in there too. There's also something that allegedly will tell you your optimal, it'll tell you stuff about the bases that are surrounding you. Performance, I guess it will tell you, what it thinks. It'll show you graphs of signal strength and signal to noise ratio, quality of your signal. Wi-Fi scan will actually show you other Wi-Fi base stations that are surrounding you, may also suggest what it thinks is the best channel for you to be on. So all sorts of wonderful. It's a really nice utility. I was very happy when I found it to find that it had all these secret little diagnostic things in there.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, but I never dug that deep into it. That's pretty cool. Like, it was the folks that, and I'll use this as a segue to a plug-ish, it was the folks at PMUG last year in Princeton, New Jersey, where I am, who told me about wireless diagnostics for the first time. I think it was a couple of years ago, but I am speaking there on Tuesday night. So if you are in all are welcome. If you are in the Princeton area, anywhere near Princeton, New Jersey, I believe things kick off around 7. So we'll be talking all about iOS 8 and doing a bunch of demos. And I hope all the demo stuff works. Because otherwise otherwise you get to see me fly by the seat of my pants, which will be even more fun. So, all right. So we're good with this, John. I can move on to Mike and his question.
Good.
All right. Sweet. Mike says, my son has a project for his second grade class on bats. I'm assuming his whole class isn't on bats. It's just his second grade class. Anyway, he says he gets to pick a bat of his choice to research and then give a presentation about. He's going between vampire bat and fishing bat. We started collecting some images off the web today, and I thought of a couple of questions. When I see an image on the web, I can either save it with a save image as or save image to downloads. This is from the control click or right click menu. Regarding quality, does it matter which I use? And if I choose the latter, save image to downloads, is there a chance that I could download something nasty embedded in the photo? So, John, I dug into this and I actually searched for pictures of vampire bats and saved the files in two different ways. And as far as quality, I got exactly the same file. It was the same size image both times. It seems that the save image as just adds the ability for you to choose where you want it to go, whereas save the image to downloads automatically saves it to downloads, saving you a couple of steps as long as downloads is where you wanted it. So I believe that's the only difference between the two. It's saving the same thing, and one is just putting them in a fixed spot, whereas the other is giving you the choice each time as to where you want to let it go. And that's what I found in my testing. But I know when we prepped the show, John, you were telling me that you had something. You found something.
Well, something to save images?
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Yeah. That's what he's doing. Yeah.
Well, I found a lot of places in Safari. If you just grab the image and drag it to your desktop, that'll typically download it as well.
That'll work.
It depends on the type of image. But yeah, that's what I do a lot of times. And, I drag it to the side and
yep. It's a good idea.
That works. Now, there was a question here about, viruses in images, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That shouldn't be a problem. But yeah, you want to, if you're concerned about that, yeah, I guess, you know, the tip, you know, don't have open safe files after downloading on.
Yeah, that's actually a good piece of advice. So in Safari preferences general, there's a checkbox way down at the bottom that says open, as John said, open safe files after downloading. And that will, if you save things to downloads, it will open them up. Pictures are part of one thing. Zip files are another. This can actually be a handy thing to turn off. If you need to download like a .gz file that you then are going to need to upload or hand to somebody else, if you download it with this checkbox on, it will decompress that. And then you won't have that .gz or that .zip file anymore. So if you want it to remain in its downloaded form, unaltered, uncheck this box. That can be really helpful if you're downloading like WordPress themes and stuff like that. That's the way to deal with that. So.
Yeah. Cause images probably, unless your viewer is messed up.
Right.
You know, it's funny because I actually had this happen once. I think someone had for whatever reason, Dave, I was searching for an image of Huckleberry Hound.
Okay.
We all fondly remember from our, you know, cartoon days. And I understand cartoons just aren't the same anymore, right?
I believe we had the first Saturday morning without cartoons on broadcast TV in the U.S. was last weekend.
Right. Okay, so I did see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so whatever happened to that? I'm still mostly a Warner Brothers fan myself.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not just the same anymore.
No, they're not there anymore.
I don't know what they could get away with, some of the stuff they did those days. I mean, some of them, I mean, especially, you know, Elmer Fudd, I mean, that guy had issues. Seriously, I mean, he had a problem.
This is nothing compared to Family Guy or The Simpsons or anything like that.
Well, those are adult cartoons, right?
Yeah, sure.
What I'm saying. So it was funny because I actually came across a page that I think was infected because, yeah, I was searching for an image of Huckleberry Hound.
Yep.
And I found it.
Yep.
With the Google image search. And so I took the image and I believe I clicked on it and then said download. Well, what I was actually downloading was an installer.
Nice.
So someone had somehow linked the image to a DMG file or something. Because all of a sudden, you know, because I had open safe files on, it ran an installer and said, hey, you want to install some new software? And I'm like, whoa.
No.
Whoa, yeah. No. This is a caution to anybody. So somehow, I don't know how whoever did this did it. But yeah, that's the danger, is that you may be downloading something, or if you say save as or whatever, you know, or download this file, and you have the setting on, you may unknowingly invoke a rogue installer, malware.
Interesting. All right, John. Well, I believe the time is upon us, my friend.
Wow. All right. Well, this is the time where.
Where you get last cut
time,
off.
That's right. Last time, everything fell apart.
That's
so
right.
This time, I think I'm going to have to talk real fast. Well, no, I don't want to talk real fast because I want people to soak it in, Dave, to learn everything they can about how to get in touch with us. And Dave, I think the best way, one way, but probably the best, is you could send an email to feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's feedback@macgeekgab.com, just in case John got cut off there.
Yeah, three times a charm. feedback@macgeekgab.com. But that's not it.
No, if you're a premium subscriber, you can email us at premium@macgeekgab.com, which gets a little extra attention. We do try to answer everything that comes in, but those of you that support us directly get a little... You get a little faster service, we like to say. So check that out. MacGeekGab.com is where you can find out about our premium offering. You can also call us 206-666-GEEK, which, John, is
4335. And about the point where I lost it last time, so I'm going to mention it quickly. But there's another community. Dave mentioned, of course, our G+, but there's also Facebook.com/MacGeekGab. where you know, you see our event scheduled, and there's some discussion there.
Yeah,
but
yeah, but honestly, I noticed somebody posted to the Facebook group this week. We're pretty much letting that one languish. You're welcome to post there, but you're going to get way more attention from the community at Google Plus. It's just where everybody is. So that's where we go.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw one person post there, but nobody's paying attention to it because everybody is at Google Plus. So check it out. Yeah. MattGeekGab.com/Google Plus is the place to go.
But for scheduling.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're on Facebook, like us over there, because that way you will get the invites and all that good stuff. Absolutely. And you'll see when the shows come out and all that good stuff. That's MattGeekGab.com/Facebook. Or Facebook.com/MattGeekGab. Either one will get you there. Because that's how we rock it. I know. Crazy. All right. We'd like to thank a couple of people. A lot of people, actually. I want to thank Michael Johnston. He converts this show to AAC. He's also the host of the iOS show. So check that out. It's a great podcast. Cashfly at CACHEFLY.com provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. That's right. From us to you. And I want to thank our sponsors. Of course, Casper at Casper.com/MGG. And make sure to use that MGG coupon for 50%, not 50, $50 off. I'll get it right. Gazelle.com, as I mentioned earlier, that's where you're going to get your, you're going to get money for your old iOS and Apple OS X devices. Barebones.com, Yojimbo and BB Edit. SmileSoftware.com is where you're going to find Text Expander, including Text Expander Touch 3 and others. Squarespace.com/MGG gets you 10% off there as well. Lynda.com/MGG gets you 7 days for free. And also, I got to say, Drobo.com. And you can, if you can also get $50 off there of the new third gen Drobo with MGG50. John, I think you're still with me. And if you are, would you please share some advice?
Well, I don't know if I should. I'm kind of afraid because I don't want to get caught